Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 11th, 2015, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
A preoccupied
Happy
Scott
birthday
Long?
Happy birthday to you. How much of that can we sing before we open?
I don't think we should say any more.
Okay, all right.
Yes, my birthday is September 10th, and we're recording this actually a day before that, which is weird. But you're going on the road again.
Really, drastically weird.
Well, that you're saying it to me, and then everyone's going to see the show on September 11th, and my birthday, you know, it's just kind of an odd...
So they're all going to feel bad that they are day late on wishing you a happy
birthday. Yeah.
Sending you very expensive poker gifts. Right?
What is going on?
I got you. All right. Well, I could say you never forget.
Yeah.
But that's more somber, right?
Yeah.
It's more fun to celebrate your birthday.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Right? And you're going somewhere. That's why we're doing it on Wednesday.
Yeah, my 25th high school reunion.
Holy cow, you're old.
Yes, I am. You know, and I thought I was too. And actually, all my classmates, you know, we've been sitting on the Facebook message board talking about how old we are, right? And about a month ago, I get a call from my dad. Hey, I just got home from my 50th high school reunion. Wanted to tell you all about it. Never felt younger in my life.
50. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Jeez.
Wow. But no, yeah, we absolutely are incredibly old. So.
Yeah, and I'm only getting older, so. Hey. So,
when I was looking for stuff for the reunion, right, I found a big box of notes that the girls passed me in high school. I know it's hard to believe.
Big box? I don't think so.
All right. It's a modest box, but it's a box nonetheless. You're off topic here.
I'm sorry.
The point is that I posted a picture of that, and people said, yeah, those were text messages back when we were school.
That's right. Check yes or no if you like me.
Yes, yes. And then you have to do that little, you know, that flip box thing, you know, where you... I don't know how to describe it. It's been so long since I'm in school. See, I'm already out of it.
Hey, is it just me, or does it seem like we talk about this story every 2 weeks on the show?
The Poker Hall of Fame?
Yeah. Is it just me? I mean, it seems like we're always talking about the Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, looking to the past, there's a nice segue there into talking about the Poker Hall of Fame. Although, lots of these people are not so much past.
Right, right.
I guess two of them technically have passed, but... most of the other ones are still young and vibrant and playing the game, right?
Oh, yeah, and still winning bracelets and whatever, but it's just weird. It just seems like this story is always on our show.
Yeah, and the really funny thing was I was, you know, getting ready to do the show notes, and quite honestly, we didn't have a lot to talk about this week. And then all of a sudden, Seth Polansky, our hero, fires off this email to us with the nominees this year, and I'm like, I had totally forgotten about this, right?
Yeah.
It just had been off my radar, so I think that's to your point, that it just seems like it happens once a year, but it seems like it happens once a month.
Sure, because first they announce that there's candidates, then there's finalists, then the actual induction, and so, I mean, it's like, it just seems like, I feel so bad for, like, Jennifer Harmon and Bjorn. I mean, they've been on there, what, 4 years in a row, and they're not getting in? I mean, they gotta get in this year, right?
I wouldn't say they have to. No.
4 years in a row.
This is part of our discussion here.
I mean, okay, so Pescatore won a couple of bracelets or whatever this year, and now he's got a few. But I mean, you know, somebody who's the founder of the Irish Open, you know, over those people, Matt Savage. Yeah, I guess he's really popular, so Hall of Fame, I guess, kind of fits that for him. Oliot, yeah, probably David Delafish Oliot, but I'm just saying.
All right, let me stop you right here, my friend. Why don't we, like, tell people what we're talking about before you just jump in with your pithy thoughts?
I figured they kind of got it already, that they were candidates nominated.
Who these people are and whether they deserve to be in the Chris Cosenza Hall of Fame, all right, so the 10 candidates nominated for induction to the Poker Hall of Fame this year have been announced. For our first-time nominees include the Italian pirate Max Pescatore, Irish Open founder Terry Rogers, noted tournament director Matt Savage, and longtime British poker player David Devilfish Hewlett. There are repeats from last year, Chris Bjorn, Bruno Fattuzzi, and Jennifer Harmon. But Bjorn and Harmon now nominated 4 years straight, as my partner said already.
Spoiler alert.
The final three have been nominated previously, but not last year, back on the ballot once again, David Chu, John Juwanda, and Carlos Mortensen. The 23 Hall of Fame members and a panel of 16 journalists, not including us.
No.
We'll decide on a maximum of 2 inductees. All right, now go ahead and complain.
I'm complaining about just about everything here. I mean, I just don't get... First of all, I still don't like the 2 inductees maximum thing.
Yeah, we're gonna always... It's gonna be the broken record. I mean, you know, and here's the other thing, too. I found out the world's most prolific DJ made $63 million last year.
No way.
Our guidance counselors failed us, Chris.
Wow.
They should have said, when I was back there taking AP history and all the stuff to try to get into good college, they're like, just take those records and scratch the shit out of them.
And spin them.
Right. And you're going to make $63 million someday.
$63 million. Oh, man.
So anyhow, so my point now is that we are going to be breaking, sounding like a broken record right here, not getting any of that $63 million, right? Because you're right, yeah. I'm going to go off on a tangent on this too thing, but you started, so go ahead.
Well, it's just, if you deserve to be in, you deserve to be in. It's you know, in baseball, they get a percentage of the vote they're in. It doesn't matter how many of them get in. And a lot of things are like that. If you deserve it, you deserve it. You shouldn't have to, as a voter, like the poker journalists, as they're calling them, you know, they shouldn't have to restrain from allowing Harmon and Bjorn from getting in because, oh, you know, Matt Savage happens to become eligible now, or Pescatore is eligible now. That's just not right. These people deserve to be in, so put them in. Put in 5 or 6 people. It's not like it's a building that you can only fit so many people in it. Right. Just do
it. Well, to play devil's advocate, I'm on Team Cosenza here, but to play devil's advocate, also, you want it to be special, right? So even though there's not a physical building where there's capacity, you know, if you're inducting 120 poker players every year in the Hall of Fame, now all of a sudden it's not special. Which, you know, not to say anything, but, you know, we have 190 bracelet events every year now.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so it's special. Special.
So yeah, all right. So, I'm sorry, I apologize to your rant.
No, you're absolutely right, though. And it's just that it can still be special with 5 or 4. I mean, they're doing those in all Hall of Fames. And here's the deal. It's like, they're going to get in anyway. So, are you thinking you're going to run out of players that are deserving of this? I don't think so. Every year, people turn 40 or whatever the age is or whatever it is. You know, like John Juwanda? Absolutely. I mean, how could you not put John Juwanda in? He's got like 5, 6 bracelets, whatever it is. Fantastic player. Cash game player, too. Mortensen, World Series champion and bracelet winner, and everyone knows him, international. You know, David Chu, tons of bracelets, too. 5, I think. Something like that. He's got a bunch. I mean, every one of these guys and ladies, I mean, if they are deserving, just put them in. It's 2 inductees. Just drives me crazy. Every year we talk about it, and every year we say it, because it's true. It's ridiculous. Maybe that's why they don't put us on the panel.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we're probably not at the top of the list to alternates.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I know none of our fans have time to go back and do this, but I would be interested to listen to a mashup of us talking about this every year for the last 6 years, right? Because I'm sure it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So the one thing I will say is I don't think everybody on the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot every year deserves to get in. There's a lot of people on that ballot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quite interestingly, there are way more professional poker players or people helping the game than there are professional baseball players, right?
Right.
So I think that's interesting to consider as well, too. So I wouldn't necessarily say that all these people will get in. I will say I can make a case for all of them being deserving of getting in. So I don't know whether we needed to put 10 or 20 or 30 in every year. I just think this artificial 2 is... too limiting, I think.
Right.
And remember also that the 10 nominees is also artificially limited, right? They could have 30 nominees if they wanted. I mean, they had, I don't know what, how many actual from the public nominees they had this year. I don't know if they ever said that, but I'm sure it was more than 10.
Right. It's
probably hundreds, right?
Right.
So, so they got two artificial things here. So here's my problem with the artificial two. I would actually almost shut up if they made it three.
Okay.
I really think the difference between two and three is pretty significant here. Now, I'm not saying if I was on the panel, which obviously I'm not, that I would vote this way. But this would be my baseline, I think. Because, and I think not only this class, but if you go back the last couple of years, I think this is kind of a trend. I think you have three distinct types of nominees every year. All right? Mm-hmm. And one, you have just the flat-out great poker players, right?
Right.
And again, this is the game of poker. Just like baseball, the lion's share of the inductees should be people that just are really good at poker, right? So you have those. Then you've got a couple every year, and this year would be Terry Rogers, Matt Savage, people that aren't really known for playing but have done a lot to foster the game and make it more popular, right?
Right.
So you have that group. And then I think you have this third group that kind of like goes in and out of those two groups and are the players that have done – that are great players – but are really almost kind of national figureheads. You know, kind of the players that in their country they kind of rally around. Like Max Pescatore, right, from Italy, and Chris from Sweden, and, you know, maybe lesser degree Carlos from Spain and Devilfish from Britain. But these are folks that are great players, but really are probably on this ballot more because they are like the signature players of that. Of their country, which you could say whether they did anything direct or not have probably helped grow the game in their respective countries. So I think those are the three categories there, and I think as a voter I would like to be able to as a baseline pick one of each of those three every year. Nice. And maybe, you know, if one of those categories is really weak one year, then I'd pick two from the other one. But I think that's a good baseline. I think right now the problem is now you're forced into this. Do we put somebody in just because we feel like we need to put somebody in because they promote the game of poker? Obviously, we need every year needs to be a great poker player. It's just going to be really weird, right? So you got to go that route. And then you've got these other folks that are like, you know, where do they fall into that? I mean, I guess probably some people could say, Scott, you're making it too hard. If you're talking about these other people from these foreign countries promoting the game of poker as well, too, they could be part of that group of the promoting side. With the added bonus of being a good player. That's probably fair to say.
Right.
That's probably what I would have to do now if I was going to choose. But three, really, would make me feel a whole lot better.
Yeah, and that seems like sort of a fair system because it sort of gives you all angles of notoriety and you know, for famous. Why you're famous. Poker Hall of Fame isn't always just because you're a great player. You're also bringing recognition to the sport somehow or the activity or whatever you want to call it, poker. So, game. And I always pushed for the percentage thing. I mean, I always thought that if you had a good... I mean, I guess because it's such a small panel, maybe that doesn't really work as well as, say, 500 voters across the country. You know, then the percentage makes more sense, I think. So, yeah, I think maybe three inductees is fair. You know, it just seems like these rigid 10 candidates, two inductees, you know, it just doesn't work sometimes. And... You know, how long are you going to leave Jennifer Harmon out of the Hall of Fame when you know she's going to get in? You know, and it's just because someone else keeps coming in that you think might nudge her out. Well, if you have that third slot, maybe you put her in finally. You know, I could easily see it being Juwanda and Oliet this year because Oliet is gone and they didn't want to honor him. And Juwanda's got a ton of bracelets.
Terrible way of doing this.
Yeah, I know. Or even Savage, just because of how popular he is, and he works with all of the poker journalists. You know, I'm sure they're always consulting him, talking to him, interviewing him. So they're probably on a good, you know, relationship basis or whatever. And so I can see again her getting, you know, passed over, and Bjorn too. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like there's something wrong with the system when she's not in the hall yet.
The problem is that there's only two every year.
So. Yeah. I know. I know. That's the problem.
All right. But here's the thing is we can't change this, right?
Right.
So only two get in this year. Maximum two.
Right.
Maximum two. Which two?
I'm going with Harmon and Bjorn.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Savage is a director, so he can get in at any time because all of his contributions will always be there. But, you know, it's his first year on. I think, right? I think it's his first year on. So,
Yeah,
his first time. Yeah, it was one of the first time nominees. So, and like Pescatore, he's still in his prime. I mean, he's still playing. You know what I mean? It's not that the other ones aren't, but I mean, Pescatore won two bracelets this year. You know, he's still not only viable, but one of the leaders out there right now. He doesn't need to be in the Hall right now. He can certainly play for decades. Juwanda, I mean, he got a lot of success early, so he's still relatively young. So I think he could wait if he had to. Chu's kind of older, and he plays. I played Raz against him, so I wouldn't mind him being in. But I think Bjorn and Harmon have waited long enough. I think they're good enough. They qualify, and they've been on this list long enough. You know, who about you?
Oh boy. You know, to be honest, I will say I did not know who Terry Rogers was before I saw this list.
Right.
But reading what he did, I mean, I always have a soft spot for the people that promote the game. And obviously, I have a lot of respect for Matt Savage. I just think, obviously, it's his first time nominee, and he will get in eventually. Poker in Ireland is pretty big, and they have that big, huge event every year. And it sounds like this Terry Rogers guy actually did a lot for that. So I might side with him. You know, and players, you know, I was thinking last night, I was like, you know, it's going to be John Juwanda out of these players, I think. But then looking at it again, 44 years old, he's done a lot, you know. Maybe his time will come soon. So I think I'm going to go with Chris Bjorn.
All right. Wow, you're going all international.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe this is the first year Terry Rogers made him on. Maybe he's going to stay on there. You never know whether you're going to stay on or not, though. That's kind of the problem with some of these folks. I'm like, you know, Tom McAvoy fell off this year, right?
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that may not make it back on the list. So, I mean, I guess you got to... If you're a really big fan of somebody, you got to vote them in when they get on because you don't know whether they're going to come back or not. But certainly Chris has just got amazing stats, you know.
Yeah.
Been around a while, and you know, I think Jennifer Harmon is going to get in at some point. I don't know, still only 50. It's I like to say. Well, older than me, but
McAvoy fell off the list because he's inducted now, so he's in the Hall.
Did he get in last year?
Yeah, him and Scotty Wynn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I can see your point, though, that people sometimes fall off the list because others come on the list. So, was Negreanu on the list last year?
Yeah, I thought he got in.
I'm trying to figure out. I can't remember if when you said that, I remember McAvoy got in because we pushed it so hard, not only in the magazine, but on the show and stuff. Yeah, he was in the Hall. He got in too, right?
We'll see.
He got into the Hall too.
Is
Negreanu.
Daniel Negreanu. Yep.
And was it, I think the year before was McAvoy, right? Yeah, 2013. Okay. So I can't remember any others that had fallen off the list. Did Huck Seed get in?
No, he was on the list last year.
So he was on the list. He hasn't gotten in. So there you go. There's an example of it happening.
Yeah, there we go. Just to go modify the record.
I knew because I remember us pushing really hard for McAvoy. So, but he's never gotten in the Hall. So as far as I know he was finalist. Like Mattisau was on the list too.
Yeah, last year.
And he hasn't gotten in. That could have been
Ted Forrest. I mean, all these great players. I mean, there's a ton out there. So
that's what I'm saying. So Harmon keeps getting on the 10. There's a reason for it. And Bjorn too. 4 years in a row, she's in the top 10. You got to put her in. I mean, I just don't see how. And him too. I think that's why I went with them because it's.
Well, here's kind of the other problem too with how they do these bios, and I wanted to have a discussion about this, right? So, if you're looking at the bios here in terms of tournament winnings, Jennifer Harmon is by far the least on this list of actual players. You know, not counting Matt Savage's and people like that, right? But there's two points I make about that. One, I think the tournament winnings is a worthless stat now.
Yeah.
I should say worthless, but it doesn't mean what it used to be, right?
Right.
Because now, you know, you have like a Jamie Gold that goes and wins one huge tournament and is, you know, at the top of the list, right? It doesn't really say anything about your necessarily your skill. I think it's more the number of final tables and bracelets and things like that. But then you have this other side. This is all tournament, right?
Right.
And this is the Poker Hall of Fame. This is not the Tournament Poker Hall of Fame, right? And we know that Jen Harmon plays in that big game, has been playing that big game for years, right?
Right.
And there should be something to be said for that, right?
Yep.
And that doesn't show up on this because you can't quantify that other than just know that she's there, right?
And that's one of the problems with the panel just being poker journalists and Hall of Fame members. I mean, yeah, the Hall of Fame members help, but you don't, like, I think I even had this conversation with, I'm pretty sure, with Doyle Brunson at Foxwoods that time, and he was talking to me about, you know, the recognition that these tournament players get, and it's, he just made it sound like it was just ridiculous because the cameras are on them when they're playing tournaments, so everyone thinks they're great. He said, but I just gobble them up when they play for real stakes against us in cash games. Those are the real poker players. That's what he said. He made it sound like that was the real game.
Saying. There's no
and
way
she,
of quantifying.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, if you go to these people who play against her day in, day out, see, it should be a process. You know what I mean? It's
well, I guess the quantify that is the fact that she's been in that game and has still in that game, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have these people that take a shot at that big game and never go back to it, then you know they can't really handle it or didn't have the bankroll for it or whatever. But she's obviously not one of them. But, yeah, I mean, the Hall of Fame, again, it is all about visibility, you know, and who's on TV and who's flashy and who's not. And that's probably why it's a little tougher for, like, you know, a Terry Rogers to get in over, you know, a Jen Harmon.
The hard part, too, is that there's no poker on TV that It's not ubiquitous anymore. I mean, it's on a couple of stations.
Well, certainly not here. I mean, I don't know what it
and
is
I
like.
I don't know what it is ever. Right, yeah. But I'm assuming, too, most of these journalists are in America. You know, I just...
Probably.
I mean, it could be a bad assumption, but really, most of the Hall of Fame members are from America. And so a lot of these guys are only getting to see, you know, now. Some of these people are just still getting... You know, they don't even know, you know, how difficult it was to play in that game or, you know, back when she was winning those two bracelets, I think she has two, right? She has two open bracelets, which at the time were a rarity. She was the only one. She was it, you know? Same with Bjorn. I mean, he's got so much success, but now that it's not ubiquitous on television, you know, people aren't going to get to know, people are going to start forgetting about these people unless they're, you know, making noise in these tournaments.
Which I guess is another point of keeping it smaller.
Yeah.
You're letting a lot of people in, and then eventually you're going to get to the point where, you know, the finalists are all going to be screen names from people that are playing overseas.
I just don't want them to be forgotten either because of the fact that it's not on television as much or it's not at the peak that it was. And,
right.
You know, it's a shame that they're limiting it to two people and these people keep getting pushed aside every year for new people on the list or whatever, so... All right, well, we spent a good 20 minutes on that, so I think we filled enough.
All right, Poker Stars is back in the United States, sort of. The behemoth of online poker recently bought Victiv, a daily fantasy sports site, and rebranded Stars Draft, and it's open for business for U.S. players who wish to draft a fantasy football team, which, oddly, is expressly legal in the UIGA, at least for now.
Yeah, I get this question all the time, how it's legal, and I always tell them there's a carve-out for it, because I don't think they ever envisioned that it would be what this is now, and now it's like, wow.
Well, it surely didn't, yeah.
There's just no way. And, you know, my friends, you know, they're like, how can this be, you know, this is exactly like poker, because it is. When you,
if absolutely.
You know, and, yeah, I don't really have much to say about this. I mean, I'm glad Stars is in the country again and everything, but, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, I really don't have much to say about this, to be honest. I mean, I think it's interesting that they're back, and they're setting the groundwork that eventually, when it's regulated or something, they're going to say, look, we're established, we're here, blah, 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 and we're doing everything above board, and that'll help their branding too, I guess. It's like
well,
a backdoor
what's interesting
way,
about this is we're starting to get some brushback on these daily fantasy sites. So,
yeah.
You know, you've got a couple states already that they're not legal in. And then... one of the top officials in Michigan, I think, came out this week and said that he didn't think it was legal, but was looking into it. So, you know, I think eventually now it's got to the point that everybody's looking at it and thinking about it and going, wait, how is this legal? And then that usually leads to it becoming not legal. So,
<Yeah.
I hope not, because I think it's a good precursor to getting poker back.
Right.
But I would not be surprised if more states start to look at this and say, hey, sorry. You guys had your fun.
You see the commercials for them, and like the brand at the bottom, the time, it says, this is for entertainment only, not a gambling site, and you're touting a $1 million winner. Yeah. I'd love to be entertained with a $1 million check. Anytime you want to entertain me with $1 million, let me know.
Oh, love it.
All right, any updates? The structures and pay scale for the Pearl River Poker Open and the Antioch Poker Tour Series at Pearl River Resort in Mississippi, October 1st to 12th, have been posted at antiochmagazine.com/Pearl River, as have discounted room rates of $49 weekdays and $69 weekends.
Yeah, folks, you can get out there. Those are great, great room rates, for anywhere, but particularly for this brand new resort.
Right, right.
Or the renovations they did at the resort. So looking forward to seeing a lot of folks out there in Mississippi. I know the property is really excited to be hosting the first Antioch Poker Tour event in Mississippi. So come out and say hi.
And you got to help my good friend Scott out here. The well is getting close to dry on all three of our listener segments. The listener spotlight, call the floor, and hand of the week. So if you've been holding on to some submissions, don't be shy. Email them to podcast@antiochmagazine.com. Or call our hotline at 206-424-6145 and win some great new prizes. All right, speaking of listener spotlight, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails the podcast. I just said all this stuff. We know all these things
already. Repetition is important.
All right, so you can email us too at podcast@antiochmagazine.com. And if you haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with those two segments, we're going to give you something cool. Comes from Adam B. He says he's been playing a lot of play money poker on PokerStars on his phone just to pass the time, and he worked his initial 1K up to 45,000 play money units, and he said, just playing ABC poker. However, he's run into a lot of situations where I'm getting 3 and 4 bets called by garbage like Jack-7 and 8-deuce, out of position, and getting coolered. I can't help but think that if these people were playing right, maybe that 45K would be closer to 60-ish. It also got me thinking, since I haven't played a whole lot of casino cash games, is this how 1-2 casino cash games play? Or do the real money games typically play a little more proper? Okay, first of all, you would not have run 1,000 up to 45,000 if everyone was playing like they're supposed to play.
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah. That's the first thing. That is not happening. I remember running it up to a million something once on that phone app. Just, you know, in like a week. Because once you get a certain amount, then you can play up to, you know, the 1,000, 2,000. There's no way you're playing 1,000, 2,000 for blinds the way you would play 1,000, 2,000 in real life.
True.
You know, so, I mean, a lot of this stuff is happening. And these guys don't care because they can replenish at least 3 times on the PokerStars Play Money site every day or within an hour. Every hour you can keep replenishing or whatever. So they don't care if they lose to you with 8-deuce. They're trying to tick you off or trying to make a funny hand or something. That's their whole gig. So,
I think that was Arians catching up to him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Had some luck there with playing, you know, good solid poker against junk and hitting, and now he's in a stage now where the junk is beating him.
Yep, absolutely, Arians.
But to his question, no, absolutely not. This is nothing like you would play in when real money is on the line. Though I will say, as we had discussed last week, this 1-2 and 1-1 no limit are pretty wild. So there are, you might still see these examples that he's talking about there, just not anywhere near as often as
right.
You would on a free site.
Right. That's not to say someone's not going to turn over Jack 8 and felt you in a cash game.
In the week.
Yeah. But for the most part, yeah, you're going to see better poker at 1-2 than you would in a play money game, especially if you're playing like rush poker or whatever. That was crazy. That stuff, just guys just playing all kinds of crap and tripling you up in 1 second. All of a sudden, you went from 1,000 to 3,000 and to 9, and then all of a sudden, you're off to the races with 100 grand in 20 minutes. And it's like, I started 1,000, you know? So, no, it's definitely not the same, and it's just variance picking up with you there, that's all.
But I think the important thing, Adam, is ABC poker is the way to go.
Yeah.
It's low-level games.
Yeah, to beat those games, absolutely, because they're not thinking any higher
than
you.
Don't try to play their game to beat them at that game. You're being solid, and stick with that until you get into situations where you need to be more creative.
Okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from Matt Bodorf. He says, in a tournament, I raise and am called by one player. The next player attempts to move all in, but as his chips are moving forward, they catch his cards and his cards flip over. He quickly covers them. I clearly saw a queen as his top card. Five players remain in the hand. The floor is called, and while we wait for the four to arrive, all other players still in the hand say they saw both cards, but they won't tell me what the other card is. I explain to the four that everyone in the hand knows both cards, and it's unfair advantage since to me, since I am the at the other end of the table. The floor informs me he will not force the player to share contents of his hand, and I must now act without knowing the second card. I told him I don't think it's the correct decision, but I decide to act. I shove all in. I tried to use another example with the floor. If this same player has openly shown his hand to the players to his left and right, in the same situation, he would no doubt be forced to show all. Why is it any different if it was an accident? It was unfortunate, but I shouldn't have to act with less information than other players were given. I may think differently if I wasn't paying attention, but that wasn't the case. I was just on the opposite end of the table.
Elliot says, if this went down as you say it did, there was no good reason for both cards and the initial all-in player's hand not to be exposed. There's never supposed to be a race to see exposed cards in which some players win this race and see the cards and some players lose this race and do not get to see them. Exposed cards in a situation like this, one, are shown to all players so that impartiality reigns and unfairness avoided at all costs. Also, your point about your location at the table is also valid. A player's physical location at the poker table should generally not be a factor in the play of a hand.
Okay.
Yeah, initially I think I told Elliot that I was a little surprised by this. And after talking to him, and now it's been a couple months since I think Matt sent this in and I talked to Elliot on this reading, I'm kind of surprised that I thought I was surprised. It seems to make sense. I guess part of me just thinks that, you know, when somebody accidentally flashes their cards, they obviously quickly try to turn them back over. And I don't think I've been at a table where the dealers ever made them turn the cards back over so everybody could see them. Now, that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just, I guess, in practice, I've just never seen it. Where I see this differently is his example here, if he's actually showing it to the players on the left and right. In that case, obviously, they're going to make them turn it over. So, but I guess I get what they say about it being a race to see it. And if some people saw and didn't, then that's not fair. It's unfortunate to the player that exposed the cards, but, you know, accidents happen.
Okay, so I guess I'll extend it a little bit longer here. What if you're the guy on the left and somebody's looking at their cards and they flash you their cards by accident and it's not an all-in or whatever it was? I mean, you know, when you say to somebody, hey, I can see your cards, put them down, you don't turn to the guy to the left and go, hey, guess what? He's got ace-king on my right. Hey, everybody, he's got ace-king on my right because I saw the ace-king.
Well, I think that's a different scenario than what Matt's bringing up here. I think what Matt's his hypothetical here, which it is totally hypothetical, is a guy just holding his cards up, you know, where everybody could, that side of the table could see for whatever reason, versus a guy, not accidentally, but being able to see because the guy's being careless, right?
Right.
It's a different story, I think. I think one's willfully just exposing cards to some folks but not others, and the other is just not covering their cards.
Okay, so the guy who was pushing his chips and accidentally, he said it in the write-up, he accidentally turned his cards over because the chips caught the corner of the cards or whatever and turned them flip over by accident. I mean, also, if somebody is looking at their cards when they're dealt to them and for some reason didn't realize that you could see his cards, it's still not intentional. How is that different? It's still by accident those cards are being exposed to a player. So now that you've seen him, are you obligated to tell the entire table or tell a dealer, hey, I saw both his cards, now you have to...
Well, I guess that's what Ellie's saying is, yeah, you are.
Wow. So, okay, so from now on, when somebody's flashing you, you got to say, hey, dealer, I saw his cards, flip them over. That doesn't seem right to me that you're going to do that in a poker room. You're going to go to the dealer and say, hey, I saw he has ace-king. You know, it just doesn't seem
well,
right.
Well, I guess going back to the whole fairness issue, that is the fairest thing to do to players at the table. Now, whether you actually do that or not, I don't know if anybody's ever going to do that. I think it's more, you know, kind of the settle it on the street like we normally do after the hand. Hey, you need a better job of protecting your hand. I saw it last time, and that's not fair to me. And the other players at the table, right? Whereas this, I think, obviously, you know, there's action. The cards were exposed to everyone for a brief moment. It's just that Matt didn't see him because he's on the other side of the table. That's a different story, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas in your scenario, there's no way Matt could have seen that card because it's just guy, you know, peeking over the guy's shoulder or whatever.
Right. Okay, so you're saying because the action was available for everyone.
Right, and that gets back to my question to Elliot. I'm like, you know, hey, I always thought, you know, hey, you're paying attention. As Matt said, I felt bad for him, and he was paying attention. It wasn't like he was, you know, betting the dogs or, you know, eating a sandwich or something. He was paying attention. He was just out of the range. But it always seemed to me that you know, those cards flipped over, and the guy quickly turned it back over. You know, he did the best he could to protect his hand.
Mm-hmm.
He should be able to protect his hand. For that, I mean, people had a minute to see the cards, and if they didn't see it, they didn't see it. But obviously, I'm wrong, and I'm glad I'm wrong. I think they made a good point as to why I'm wrong.
Okay.
The other thing too is I think we're lucky here that the guy was all in, right?
So yeah.
It's not really killing his ability to act on his hand. He's acted to the maximum that he could over this hand. Now, obviously, the fact that his cards are flipped over makes everybody else's decision really easy on whether they call or not, right? Or how the rest of the action goes. this would be a far more unfortunate thing if he just raised to 100 and had 800 behind or something, right?
Yeah.
Because now he's going to play the rest of the hand knowing that everybody knows exactly what he has.
Yeah, he can't be deceptive or whatever.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
All right.
But hey, just be careful with your heart, too.
We're going to complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're back in the $1, $2 No-Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. Only 15 minutes have passed since the last hand, and this time we find ourselves on the button. The blinds post, it's folded around to an MP who makes the call. There are two more callers to the hijack, the villain from the last hand, and he makes it $12 to go, his standard raise. He started the hand with 150 to our 300. Remember, this is the guy who knows just enough to get himself into trouble and then likes to make snarky comments after he gets beat, criticizing others' play. We look down at the Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs. For a split second, we think about stringing this guy along and only making the call, but with several other people still in the hand, we can't give someone a good price to come in. We make it $30 to go. Perhaps that's a little light. It gets folded around to the hijack, who makes a snide remark about donkeys, and then makes the call. He checks dark as the flop comes down the jack of diamonds, nine of clubs, seven of spades. This seems like a fairly safe flop, and with about $65 in the pot, we make a $40 bet. Our opponent wastes little time in shoving his remaining stack. So, it's $80 to us, and we've got an overpair. What's the move?
I think stacks are dictating my move here. It's really hard to narrow his range. He could have aces or kings or a set, which have us crushed, just as easily as he could have ace, king, or a smaller pair, which we have crushed. Since it's just $80 to us to call, I'm not going to be spooked. 300? Maybe I'll be the guy who's going to call Ghostbusters.
All right, so last week I
was
just
on the other day. I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I wrote call.
You're going to call.
Enough said.
Enough said.
Yeah. All right, let's see what happens.
Hello again. Again, this was not that tough a decision. The guy's been fuming lately, and it's $80 to win $225. We're getting a great price on our money and can't get it in fast enough. Our opponent confidently tables the King of Hearts, Jack of Clubs, and once again we have him dominated. The board runs out safe, and we take in another nice pot as he storms off muttering to himself. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes some calls are easier than others. It all depends on the opponent and the situation. I hope to see you on the felt.
I think it's pretty hard for me to feel bad for this guy calling a pre-flop raise with a trap hand. So nice hand, Mal.
A re-raise, yeah. He Dan Negron, who calls his King Jack the rookie hand, and now we know why. You know, that's the kind of hand that he looks good to you when you don't really understand the game yet. And don't understand why you're getting in trouble until you lose too much money with it. So,
yeah, originally when I was getting ready to write my response here, I was like, I felt This guy just kind of got lucky, flop top pair, and just happened to be against an overpair. Then I went back, looked at the action, and I'm like, nope. Yeah. He actually calls his re-raise. You know, if it was just he raised $12 and we just smooth called him our 12, then I would feel less bad for him. But once he called the re-raise, then he made his own bet.
Yeah, so, all right.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Our good friend Dave Bloomberg is back in the hot seat today.
Yay.
And he says this is from a 1-3 no-limit game in St. Louis. He says you've been playing about an hour or so at this table and has around his starting stack of 200. And limps, three limpers to him, and he's in the small blind with 7 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds.
Yeah. All right. I mean, yeah, I probably would just call just because, you know, you got these sort of one-gapper suitors, you know, you're getting a pretty good price on your money. I know we're going to be out of position and all that, but if you hit it really hard and you've got discipline to deal with that, you know, then you could fold it. But, I mean, you're not going to get – you got three limpers and a big blind behind you. It's very rare that you're going to get 5-1 on your money. You know what I mean? With connectors or one gappers like this, so you might as well go for it. But just reminiscent that, you know, in the past, people who are out of position with cards like this get into trouble when they hit one pair. So don't get into trouble.
Yeah, I think there's a slight difference between this and what we usually talk about. Usually it's some guy with like Jack 7 offsuit or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's only a buck. And that hand has so much more limited potential to win. Than this hand. This hand has a lot of possibilities. But again, it still is a hit harder go home kind of hand. But I'm more inclined to put the buck in. Or I guess it's $2 here, right?
Two bucks, yeah.
With this hand and try to be very disciplined than I am with the people that say, oh, it's King Deuce. I gotta call.
Right.
All right. Our hero says, I see no reason to do anything but call. I'm not going to raise, but not throwing it away either. I think you can make a case to raise. I just think it's kind of dangerous in a cash game. In a tournament, I could make a better case for raising.
Yeah, because you're going to be out of position the rest of the way, and you don't know if these guys were, you know, hoping that someone would raise behind them, and then they're going to just throwing money away. But being out of position with connectors like this, you really don't want to be either. So if you happen to raise and then get a caller, and then he doesn't go anywhere. Now you're stuck with 7-9 out of position the rest of the hand, in a hand that's a raised pot. So I can make a case for it as long as you know they're all going to fold.
True. Or you have the discipline to really stick with the hand.
Yeah.
Push you off. I also am never going to fault anybody for folding here.
Right.
There are a lot of people that would fold here. And this is kind of the difference between a 1-3 and a 1-2. You know, yeah. An extra dollar, I think, makes a difference. You know, if it's $1, okay, fine. $2, now you're committing a couple more, an extra dollar that you shouldn't with a bad hand. So
yeah. Yeah.
I don't think anybody should criticize anybody for folding here.
I agree.
All right, the big blind checks, and the flop is the King of Diamonds, 10 of Diamonds, 7 of Hearts. So we have bottom pair and a flush draw. And, he actually starts with us.
Yeah, that's a nice flop. I mean, a pair and a flush draw, people would get all their money in on that. So I know a lot of people that would do that. It's not the greatest draw, but, you know, the odds of two diamonds being out to someone else's hand and higher than yours and, you know, I mean, it's not likely. So the thing is that I would like to know what these other players are like, if there's anyone that's aggressive in there, but I guess they all limped, so they're probably not aggressive, so I would probably bet out.
Yeah, at least not in this hand, they aren't.
Right, so if they're not really aggressive, then I would probably bet out and try to just take control of the hand, and if I get a caller, fine, because I've got a pair and outs. I think I have outs. I also have a backdoor straight draw, which is not a great one, but I have one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't mind taking control of this hand now. It's pretty coordinated. People might try to raise you off it, but I got a pretty powerful hand right now. So even if somebody tried to raise me or whatever, I wouldn't mind going to the mat with this hand now, just because a pair is huge. It's not easy to make a pair. It may be the small pair, but it's not easy to make a pair. And then you have a flush draw on top of it and a backdoor straight draw. I think this is worth playing now. So I would probably bet, you know, half, two-thirds of the pot or something.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a probe bet here to find out what folks have. If, you know, it was limped around, I mean, a probe bet might actually win it right here, which is quite fortunate. If nothing else, you're probably going to get a couple people out of the pot, which is fortunate. If somebody raises you, I mean, I might decide, all right, fine. I figured out somebody out there has something. Or I might decide, hey, they got something, and I'm going to peel one more card up. So,
right.
I'm not going to let somebody else bluff at this and not have any idea what they have.
I agree.
All right, so he says the action starts with him. 13 in the pot after the dollar jackpot drop and the dollar rake is taken out. He's bought a pair and a flush draw. He says, I figure I might as well lead the action here to my pair and flush draw. This way I can fold out some better hands while somewhat concealing the flush draw. So I lead out for 10.
Yeah, sounds okay.
I get one caller. This villain is a 51-year-old regular. I know his age because he told a waitress at one point. I know he's a regular because of the way staff and other players talk to him. He has a big stack, but has been racked up for a couple rounds after repeatedly saying he was going to leave.
Hmm.
He's not gotten too far out of line as far as I've seen.
Four. He can't play out of his rack.
That's right.
Tell him to go home, fold it.
The hand's over. I'm like, sorry, that hand is no involved. He was out of the rack. Technicality! All right, the turn is the 9 of clubs. Our board now is king of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 7 of hearts, 9 of clubs. Turn 2 pair, but not a terrific 2 pair.
Yeah, I mean, I guess queen jack could be out there now, and we're kind of in trouble. But we have 2 pair, and we have outs. We have every 9, every 7.
Queen jack would have been open-ended on that board, so there's
yeah.
No reason for them to go with the bet we made.
Yeah. I'm still going to bet, though. I just made 2 pair, and I have a flush draw, backdoor, redraw. So, not backdoor, but a redraw. So I'm going to bet again. I'm probably going to bet 25 or so.
Yeah, because it's hard to believe that the person that, if they had queen jack, it would be just brutal luck that it's queen jack of diamonds, right?
Right.
So flush is still open, and our boat, obviously, is still live as well too, so
right.
Even if we're up against that queen jack, we've got a ton of outs to approve, so you're right, I'm not slowing down at all.
What would you bet? Same about 25?
Probably about that, yeah.
Okay. What's he doing?
Alright, our hero says since our villain just called, I think I'm going to lead out again. I bet 16 into the $31 pot.
That's not bad. I mean, a lot of people will bet half the pot. I just feel like it's so draw heavy. Yeah, maybe the straight got there, but you know, there's other straights too. There's flush draws too. So, you know, it could be a 4-card straight that we're up against later. You know, that you don't want to protect against too. So, there's a lot out there that to consider trying to protect against. So, I have 2 pair. I'm betting it. 16 is probably right because that's about half the pot. You know, on 4th Street is about right. But I just wanted to bet a little bit more just because I felt like I was ahead, and I didn't want this guy to catch me on a 4-card anything. So,
right. All right, our villain flat calls again.
Okay.
Go to the river, which is the queen of diamonds. So our final board is king of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 7 of hearts, 9 of clubs, queen of diamonds. So we improve, or do we?
Yeah.
And obviously first to act with $62 in the pot.
Yeah, I'm not going to not bet my flush. I realize this guy's probably going to end up with an ace of diamonds in his hand or something and push us off the hand or whatever. It's just hand of the week. That's the way things go. I just can't. I can't play that way. I have to bet. I probably bet half the pot.
All right. I'm thinking off the top of my head. This is a check call for me. And I guess the reason I'm thinking, I know I'm a little weak in doing that. what we talked about in the last street though was we were trying to figure out whether this guy had queen jack, and if he did have queen jack, then we still had outs. But he didn't raise us there, and. Why would he not raise us there with the board the way it is, right? So I don't think he has that. So then what's he in here with some kind of top pair or a better 2 pair than we had? And that seems a little dangerous to be in. So the fact that he could have been on the flush draw with obviously better cards than we have is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be necessarily scared by it, but I don't know. If we bet here and we get raised, are we triumphant in thinking that our flush is good and call whatever the raise is?
That's a good question.
Are we opening ourselves to be pushed off? Now, obviously, if we check, there's no reason we couldn't get pushed off either. But if he had a better flush, he's not going to bet too much, right? So I would rather check call and lure him into a bluff in case he doesn't have, or make him think that his hand is better than it is, and then turn over my flush and take whatever I get out of it at this point.
So we're thinking this guy might have limped with ace rag of diamonds.
Could be,
because
yeah.
He has no other cards really available. He's got three royal, I mean, maybe ace jack of diamonds, maybe, but did he really limp with that? Maybe. Okay, so my reason to bet was that I wanted to get full value for this hand. I mean, I've made the flush that I thought was a backdoor out for me. I realize he called, but I've made a flush. If I check and he checks, I lose value on this hand. You know, I just don't see me not betting it.
Maybe he won't call. I mean, you don't know how much value you're losing. You're right. You're taking a risk at losing value.
Right.
I'll give you that. But I don't know how much value you're going to lose. I'm more worried with, you know, betting whatever we're going to bet and having this guy raise us and then have to either feel weak and fold or flush, which would be tough to do, but correct if we thought that we were beat, or call a lot more money than we intended to find out that we're wrong.
Yeah,
and if we check, again, if he doesn't have the flush, he might take a stab at this. He might think that we're scared of the flush, when really we have a flush, right? We're just scared of a bigger flush.
So right.
We might induce a bet, so it might be a better way of getting value from somebody that, whatever, decided that he didn't have his hand, or he missed whatever, I don't know what he would have missed here, but... I think there's still a way to get value out of this by checking. I don't think checking eliminates getting value out of this hand.
A suited ace rag and a suited jack rag are the only hands that we really lose to.
Right. And I don't really think that jack rag is...
And I don't think jack rag is... So you're basically limiting it to one hand, essentially, ace rag suited. And so I have to weigh that. I really think I would bet maybe a third of the pot to half the pot. I really think I would bet this hand. You know, if we didn't have the benefit of it being hand of the week and you're just playing it live... And you're playing cash, and you've made a pair and a flush draw, and then you make two pair, and then you make a flush, and that whole, okay, he's calling, but maybe he's calling with top pair weak kicker, maybe he's calling with hoping to hit a straight, and then he hit the straight, but now he's just slow playing us.
I see all those hands that we're going to bet if we check, so we're not losing value. We beat all those hands.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe we do check call.
The only way we lose value here is, if we bet, I mean, he's got to have something that he thinks is good, and we've been betting the whole way, and now we bet when the flush gets there. Now he's got to really think, he's got to put us on the kind of hand that we have, and that's kind of tough, I think. So I think there's a bigger chance of him folding a weaker hand because we're betting out here than him just checking behind here.
Hmm.
Pretty sure he's going to bet something here. So we're going to get value out of this hand. And it's just kind of a hedge on my part. If he happens to have that ace rag and hit that flush, you know, he's going to want value out of this hand too, right? So he's not going to bet $100 here when the pot's 62 or something, right?
Right.
And then we'll call, and then if we're wrong, then hey, you know, as a reminder not to play small blind hands.
Or at least raise so that the...
Right.
If he has
but if we
rags.
Bet here, then he's going to be able to raise. Then now he's going to feel more emboldened to bet even more than he was before, because now it's not really, I got to get some value out of this hand. Now this guy had already shown that he wants to bet out, so that's my concern.
Yeah. All right, now I got to know what happened.
All right, our hero bets $25 into the $62 pot, and our opponent raises to $75.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was afraid of. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think for the extra 50 I'm going to go away, but I guess we don't know what he has yet either, so we might still win this hand. But I guess this is what I'm saying. If we don't bet here, and let's assume he has his beat, he's not going to bet 75.
Right, he's going to bet 28, 30 or something. And then
something like that, and then we're going to get out of this hand losing less. So that's value there too, right?
You're saving, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not always value betting to get money out of it. It's also... controlling the pot and not losing as much when you have a losing hand too. So that's the situation we're in now. I think if we call here, which we probably will, we've committed 75 to this hand if we lose, when we could have committed 40.
Right. All right. Well, I'm calling this now because I made my flush and I'm hoping this guy has a straight or two pair or something. I'm hoping he has like king queen or something. I realize now it's a bluff catcher because of the raise, but I'm hoping that, you know, the guy didn't understand the value of his hand and But right. something tells me he's going to have that ace rag now because of the way he limped, you know, and then stuck around forever.
A lot of things point to it. That yeah. doesn't mean that he does, but it's certainly a possibility. A pretty strong possibility, right?
Yep.
All right. Ario says, as I look at it, I realize that only two diamonds beat me, and it seems like if he had an ace, he would have raised pre-flop. I don't know about that.
Yeah, not an ace rag.
I think he's using the third diamond as an attempt to bluff me because I've been leading the whole time, and in theory, the diamond should have scared me when a guy just called twice. That's entirely possible as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we would have got that same scenario had we checked, right?
Right, he still would have bet to steal it, so.
Just not been as exposed to as much money.
Right.
All right, we call, and he turns over king, queen.
Yay, I said that the last second.
Says, not quite the bluff I thought it was. The river helped me more than I thought it did by also giving him top two pair. But I was right at betting all three streets, hid my flush draw from him.
Interesting that the guy didn't do any kind of aggression at all with top pair, decent kicker on an all-limped preflop action. You know what I mean? And not to protect that hand at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess if I had to defend him, it would be that, you know, it's a limp pot and then the small blind. I'm always scared when small blind bets out.
Right.
On the flop, right?
Right.
Especially in a limp pot, because that means they could have anything, right? And they just decided to have it. And obviously, I mean, we could have king 10, we could have king 7, so he's outkicked at that point. So it's more of a defensive call, I think, both of those form, right?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I like my hand, I think it's probably best, but the small blind's betting out, so he could have anything, so I don't want to give up on this hand, because I think I might be good, but... And that's probably why he didn't, you know, raise more.
I got to tell you, the raise on the end with king-queen is horrendous because any jack is a straight. Any jack is a straight. What are you raising with? I mean, it's got to be a bluff raise. I mean, yeah, you have king-queen, but he must not have seen the jack. I mean, any jack is a straight.
That's probably safe to say.
You know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Also, too, I mean, I guess you're playing the it's a semi-bluff with the... with the heart, I mean, the diamonds out there, right?
Yeah.
Because, again, he's heads up, right? So he knows that it's unlikely that if we have a flush draw that we're going to be betting the whole way like we did. It's just, I mean, he has to put us on hand like we did, you know, where we kind of backed into our flush, but we had something else.
Yeah, it's just any jack. I mean, even if we're betting it the whole way with jack 10, you know, with a jack of diamonds in our hand, or something of that right. nature, even ace jack of diamonds, you know, but obviously we probably would have raised pre-flop with that. It's just, to me, it's just any random jack.
But then you've also got to think, is any jack going to call now? Because now, I mean, it doesn't have to be a jack. I mean, a jack gives you straight, but there's a flush out there now.
Right.
And again, this guy played his hand like a flush draw the entire way. Had me fooled.
I don't think he bet enough on the end for it to be a bluff. That's the thing. It's like anybody's going to call 50 more if they have anything to bet out with on that river.
Probably.
Because we're not bluffing betting 25 on that river. So we have something that's worth calling. So if this guy is bluffing, he doesn't want us to call. I think this guy just didn't understand. I think this guy thought his hand was great.
Yeah.
That's what I think. It just feels like that. But all right. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.